Hi, podcast listeners. Lost in the Stacks broadcasts on WREK Atlanta from the campus of Georgia Tech every Friday at noon. Thanks for joining us through the internet. And if you have a moment, let us know how you found us, how you're listening, and what you like. We are always trying to improve and expand. Enjoy the show.
The door bursts open and standing in the doorway, the same face, the very same Dorothy Crosland, glowing, transparent, in her pearls and heels and chic business suit, the Georgia Tech pin on her lapel, an old gold book cart levitating at her side.
What do you want with me?
Much.
Dorothy's voice, no doubt about it.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Charlie Bennett, in the studio with Emmy Decker, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko. The band is back together. Now, normally, at this moment, we would announce who is running the soundboard for the episode, but not today. Today, we wait to the end to find out who dealt with the A-B button. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk, whichever you're here for. We hope you dig it.
Today's show is called Ask Me Who I Was, which is a reference to one of the greatest moments from any of our three Christmas season shows.
Our Litmus shows.
Wait, why are we referencing an old Christmas show in February?
The short answer is that one of the ghost characters from our 2014 library-centric rewrite of Dickens' A Christmas Carol was none other than Dorothy Crosland.
The long answer?
Well, Charlie, are we ready for a long answer?
Dorothy Crosland was one of the great library directors in Georgia Tech history. And we want to honor that, Emmy. Our guest today, Isabel Altamirano, will tell us why Dorothy was the best.
If you, our listeners, want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is Lits371 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 371. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or nominations for great library directors with that hashtag.
Our songs today are all about being bold, forging a path alone, and reaching the top, just like Crosland did. So we're going to start with a song about discovering limitations that others place on you and looking for ways to get around them. This is All We Ever Look For by Kate Bush, right here on Lost in the Stacks. All We Ever Look For by Kate Bush, and that was a very Kate Bush-sounding Kate Bush song. This is Lost in the Stacks, and our guest today is Isabel Altamirano, the engineering and chemistry librarian here at Georgia Tech. She is also co-author of a paper called History of the Georgia Tech Library with Emphasis on the Crosland Era, and it was presented at last year's American Society of Engineering Education Conference, along with co-authors Betty Finn and Leisha Lee, also of the Georgia Tech Library. Isabel, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back.
So, Dorothy Crosland is a name that is familiar to anyone who's been to the Georgia Tech Library. The tower, which is currently undergoing a renovation, was named after her. There's a portrait of her on the first floor, just outside of archives. So, the question, the title of the show is Ask Me Who I Was. So, tell me, who was Dorothy Crosland?
Dorothy Crosland is a Georgia native. She studied librarianship at Emory University. And she
back
really,
when they had a library program,
school,
right?
Yes, I guess so. she became the fourth librarian at Georgia Tech. All librarians at Georgia Tech had faculty status. And another strange thing about librarians is they were all females. At the time that she was appointed in 1927, most library directors were men. So that was a strange thing, but she did a good job. in her first annual reports, maybe from the last 29 to 1930s, she was working at the Carnegie Library, where the president now has his office. And she asked for simple things like a janitor, garbage cans, and money for a professor to keep the library open till 8 p.m.
A professor to keep it open?
Yes, an English professor who, I guess, needed a little extra money.
Moonlighting. As a library staff member.
Yes.
So how did she come to the library in 1927?
The previous librarian, Frances Newman, wrote a novel. And she took a leap of absence to promote the novel, and she never came back.
I guess the novel was successful?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay. What was it, by the way?
I forgot the name.
Hang on. I have it. It's a Hard-Boiled Virgin?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No wonder it was successful.
I remember an interview that Newman did, Frances Newman. She said she didn't want to get married. She didn't like housework. She didn't like this and that. It was very radical for the 1920s. And so she went off to Europe, New York, and left Atlanta.
And was succeeded by Dorothy Crosland, who had sort of an independent streak of her own, though,
yes,
right?
She did. Yes, okay. She did. Dorothy, when she got the job, she was actually Dorothy Murray. And she was appointed acting librarian in 1927. And in 28, she got married to Mr. James Henley Crosland. So when she signed her letters, she would either sign them Mrs. Dorothy Crosland or Mrs. J. Henley Crosland, which was the style of the time. And she continued working. She didn't stop working. He was a railroad executive. And she had one child. And she worked until 1983, I think. Yes.
So what was the library? You mentioned that when she started work, it was in the Carnegie Library, which not currently the library, and that's you said where the president's Georgia Tech president's office
is today. Yes.
Okay. So what was that library like when she started?
When she the library was dedicated in 1907 by money given by Andrew Carnegie, and it was at that time, 20 years on after it was built, it was very crowded. Extra books were put in the Knowles dormitory, which is where I think the building of student success is right now. Okay. In the basement, though. That's how much room they didn't have. Students would just crowd all along. She did have problems with vermin. And one time she asked for a stapler in one of her annual reports.
So the library was just not allocated a janitor and a stapler and someone to keep it open till 8 o'clock.
I'm so glad times have changed.
And it doesn't mention air conditioning either. So I did see that the first few years they closed during the summer.
So you mentioned that it wasn't common for there to be a female library director at the time. When you say that she was the librarian, does that mean like the head librarian, or does it mean, like, at the time, in 1927, when she started, was there just a librarian?
There was another librarian. She was the director. They called her librarian with a capital L, and her title later became library director. Today, our library director is a dean level.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So at that time, she wasn't a dean. She wasn't a director. She was just the librarian. Okay. But there were assistant librarians.
What was Georgia Tech like when she came?
It was still small. Most of the buildings were on North Avenue. They had a manufacturing building, a textile building. There were no women on campus except Dorothy and a few other women administratively. And
Dorothy Crosland was the only faculty, because you said she was a faculty.
Right.
So was she the only female faculty member?
I am not sure about that. That's a good question to ask Wendy from archives.
We will consult the archives. I can't speak authoritatively to that.
There was a night business school in the 1910s, 1920s, and there were female students, but they weren't considered Georgia Tech graduates for some reason.
And she went to Emory for her education.
Right.
Would she have wanted to attend Georgia Tech?
Yes. And one of the alumni magazines from the 1960s or 70s, she said, if I would have had the chance, I would have gone to Georgia Tech to be an engineering student.
Wow.
But since I didn't have the chance, I did the second best thing, just to become their librarian.
And she didn't have the chance because...
she was a woman. There were no women admitted to Georgia Tech at the time.
Right. I think it was 1952 that the first woman was admitted to Georgia Tech, something like that.
Yes. So.
Oh, man.
Isabel, you've spent a lot of time reading through Dorothy's materials in the archives. I've seen you in the archives. What is? How would you characterize your sense of Dorothy Crosland's voice that you've heard sort of firsthand from reading her letters? And what was her tone and her sort of personality that you can tell?
She was very formal with other library directors and librarians. But with the staff, I could see that she was very informal. And I also had a question. When did she sleep?
We are speaking with Isabel Altamirano about Dorothy Crosland and the history of the Georgia Tech Library. And we will be back with more after a music set.
You can file this set under Fred. You and I are going to have it out later. hdl.handle.net/1853/58508. Is that
nice?
A hyperlink?
Well done.
Dude.
One Step at a Time by Brenda Lee. And before that, you heard WOMAN by Etta James. And prior to that, Sister Suffragette by Glennis Johns from our favorite Mary Poppins soundtrack. Songs about forging your own path against resistance.
You're listening to Lost in the Stacks, and our guest today is Isabel Altamirano. She's a librarian here at Georgia Tech who has written a research paper, co-authored it, on Dorothy Crosland, who was the head librarian at the Georgia Tech Library from 1927 to 1953 and director from 1953 to 1971. Isabel, did I get those dates right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I think in the last segment we may mention that she worked until 1983. 83 is actually, just a quick correction, that's actually the year that she passed away, right?
She did so much.
Yeah. That's, she packed a lot into her 70-some years. But yeah, that's kind of what I want to talk about in this segment. All, you know, we talked about the library that she came into and the environment that librarians and particularly female faculty members faced at Georgia Tech. So I want to talk about how she kind of entered that environment, took it, and accomplished so much, because she had a very long list of accomplishments here at Georgia Tech, didn't she?
Yes, I'm going to just read a few of them. Okay. In the 1940s, she started a campaign to replace the small Carnegie Library to what is now Gilbert Price, and that wasn't dedicated until 1953. But in the meantime, in the 40s, she made Georgia Tech a patent depository. That means all the patent papers from D.C. were coming in paper form to the library. And that happened because a gentleman flew from Jacksonville, Florida, to here expecting a patent library because of Georgia Tech's reputation, and he found nothing. So she didn't like that, so she started. And we were the 22nd in the nation to be a patent depository library.
Did they have phones back then at the time of his trip?
I'm yes.
Just curious.
Yes, but
okay. He just wanted to fly.
He wanted to fly, or he was already expecting it to be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. let's see. In 1946, she became the first librarian, American librarian, to go to Europe. Because of World War II, a lot of technical papers and journals were not sent to the U.S. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to build up that hole in the collection. She received a grant to do this shopping.
Well, so this is as a consequence of the war. So during the war, librarians, and I guess a lot of faculty, probably did not travel to Europe just because of the war, the state of war there. So after the war, she was the first to go over, and the purpose was
to buy technical papers written by even the Germans, because the Germans at that time had a very strong scientific knowledge base, even though they were the enemy. Their work was still important. Mm-hmm. And also, there were a lot of journals that just didn't make it through the mail because I'm assuming everything went through on ships, and ships were always in danger of being sunk by the submarines.
Right. So that's primarily what she did, was get technical
documents,
information. Because it was the Germans after the war that built the U.S. rocket program.
Yes.
Pretty mm-hmm. much.
Yes. And when she arrived at Heathrow Airport, she had 4 orchids on. When she left Atlanta, her friends presented her with orchids. She landed at Heathrow with these 4 orchids on, and a reporter asked her, "Who are you?" He thought she was probably a celebrity or something, and she said she was just a working woman to buy books for a library. But he doubted her, says, "You have to be somebody else. I can't believe you're just coming here to buy books."
An orchid smuggler, maybe.
So let's see what else she did. Let's see.
Well, one of the huge accomplishments that I think is still important in Georgia Tech today is her role in founding the College of Computing.
Yes.
And can you talk a little bit about how she was involved with that?
Okay. Both Price Gilbert was already built, the Price Gilbert Library, and she was getting a graduate edition, which later became the Cross and Towers, built. There was not enough room for all the students who liked to study in Price Gilbert. Price Gilbert was one of the first air-conditioned buildings on campus.
Wow.
So, and very nice and airy with the windows. So she started thinking. She saw computers were coming, and she said, "We have to do something about this. I don't understand computers, but I know this is going to be very important." So she got a grant to study information science, not computing, not computer science, just information science. And she had 2 programs to develop scientists and librarians about all that information. So after that, she says, "We can start a master's program." And she worked with the faculty to start the information science master's program. She recruited an expert in the field, Vladimir Smelka. He was originally from Czechoslovakia, and he survived World War II by hiding out. And he came from Colombia, and he became the first dean of the School of Information Science. That school is now the College of Computing.
Wow. So it took a librarian to have the vision to see
yes.
the need for a College of
yes.
Computing.
There was an interview done by the Alumni Association when Dr. Vladimir was still alive, and he said she didn't know what computers were, but she knew they were going to be important in the future.
I know this is that your work was about the Georgia Tech library history, but do you know where that the establishment of the Information Science College at Georgia Tech, where it fits in with other colleges in the U.S.? Like, was Georgia Tech one of the first to have this, or?
I'm not sure about that, but she was the one doing very investigations. Nobody else on the campus was thinking about it because, remember, computer science came out of math, and a lot of it was maybe coming out of the top secret status, like the codes, breaking the codes in England, the Bletchley codes,
During World War II.
So some of it was top secret, and most of it was mathematics doing computer science, what is now computer science work. Mm-hmm. But she saw, I think, the big trends, what was coming. She could piece everything together. She could see the big picture.
Were any librarians faculty in the College of Information Science?
Yes. The gentleman who became after her, let me see. I think Richard Meyer, one of the directors, and maybe even Edward Roberts, he taught in the Information Science program.
Both of those were library deans that followed
Dorothy
Crossan.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned the tower. Here at Georgia Tech, the tower that's undergoing renovation is called the Crossland Tower. It was originally called the Graduate Edition. How did naming it after Crossland come about?
I think this happened after she had died. They wanted a way to honor her and recognize the contribution she had made to the library.
Right.
So that's why they named it after her.
And since that was a really big contribution,
right,
they put her name on it.
On a really big building.
You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be talking with Isabel Altamirano on the other side of the hour about the amazing Dorothy Crossland, who was the director of the GT Library from 1953 to 1971.
This is Rachel Rosenfeld coming to you from Hollywood, California, where I am the Archival Acquisitions Professor for the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Margaret Herrick Library, and you are listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
Today's show is called Ask Me Who I Was. If you've been listening since the top of the show, you know by now that Dorothy Crossland was an exceptional director of the Georgia Tech Library and an invaluable asset to the Georgia Tech campus as a whole from the 1920s through the 1970s. She rose to a place of influence and leadership on a male-dominated campus and in a male-dominated society. The following Dorothy Crossland quote was delivered in a speech to a conference about federal funding for libraries in 1966, and I think it sheds a little light on the qualities that made Dorothy special. "We must never be content. In this complex world we live in today, we must dream, have vision, courage, and conviction. We must be true to ourselves. Armed with these tools, with an interest in people and what they are doing, courage to face them, and conviction that the demands for good libraries are legitimate because they are backed with facts, one can open doors not only in Washington, but throughout this world of ours." I like a good shot of optimism these days. File this set under Z687.W45X.
Bye Bye Baby by Big Brother and the Holding Company, featuring Janis Joplin on vocals, of course.
Featuring Janis Joplin.
Yeah. And Run, Run, Run by The Supremes. Those are songs about taking chances and having important things to do.
We are back to talk more with Isabel Altamirano about Dorothy Crossland, who was head librarian at Georgia Tech from 1927 to 1953 and director of the library from 1953 until her retirement in 1971. So, Isabel, can you tell us a little bit about the process of that you and Leisha and Betty went through conducting research to write your article? What was that like?
We needed to do mostly primary research at the archives. It's been a long time since a lot of us have done that. You couldn't go on the computer and just find information. We did go on the computer to find articles about Dorothy in the Atlanta Constitution and the Atlanta Journal newspapers. But that's about it. The rest of the time, we looked through the files about how she organized her work. She had files on letters that she wrote to people, companies that she wrote to. So we just looked through them and see what was applicable for the project. She had a lot of things we didn't mention. For example, when something was lost or damaged, she signed off on a letter. They had to have a number, a part number, and saying where it was and how it was damaged if they knew or if it was stolen. And she had to sign every one of those letters. And I don't know who kept track of the numbers, of the code numbers for that.
And so those letters are part of her archives?
Yes.
Do you think she had a bottle of bourbon in her desk?
Probably.
For days where she had to sign all those?
Yes.
I was joking, but Isabel thinks yes, absolutely.
I would think this is all before Excel, so I don't know how she kept track of those numbers of each item in the library that could be moved.
Wendy, is that bottle of bourbon still in the archives?
No comment.
She hosted a lot of parties with the president's wives, and she had a lot of social events. She appeared in the social engagement section of the newspaper also.
Do you know if there's anyone on campus who, still on campus, who knew her, or were you able to talk to anyone?
No. We had recordings that the Alumni Association made maybe about 15, 20 years ago of people who knew her and talked about her, but I don't know if anybody is around right now. Either they've retired or they're on the other side.
What do you think Dorothy Crossland will be most remembered for? We talked a lot about her accomplishments in the second segment of the interview, and we didn't even get to a whole bunch of them. We didn't get to her role in admitting women finally admitted to Georgia Tech in 1952, but she played a role in that, didn't she?
Yes. She and the president of the time, Mrs. Van Leer, so if one of the buildings are with her name. They started a campaign to admit women to Georgia Tech. They wrote to the Georgia state legislatures. They talked to President Van Leer to get his permission and just started a campaign. And everyone said, it's about time. This is the time also that maybe desegregation was starting. So they said, if we can admit African-American people, it's time for women to come in. And also at the time, a lot of schools were also, who were mostly male schools, were starting to admit women also. So they said, let's go for it.
What year was that? You all guessed at when the first
The campaign started in 52, but I don't know when the women were finally admitted.
I don't have that number. It was 52.
I just want to say, if you're a 65 to 70-year-old person, you remember a time when women weren't students at Georgia Tech. I just want to make that clear to anybody listening.
Yes. One of the librarians who works here was in school in the 70s, and she remembers that she had a hard time finding a woman's bathroom on campus.
Well, I think that legacy... kind of, even though women were admitted finally sometime in the 50s, that legacy was passed down because in our current library, when our current dean came, she found a library that was a women's library that was a converted men's library that just had a piece of paper.
Are you saying library when you mean bathroom?
Yes.
That's a little bit of a Freudian slip there, dude.
Let's not interrogate that too deeply.
Okay.
But there was a bathroom in the library when our current dean arrived that was a women's bathroom, but it just had the letters W-O taped to the front of the men.
In fact, just to slam this one home, the four floors of the Price Gilbert Library, it was the men's room on the first floor, women's room on the second, men's on the third, women's on the fourth. Or perhaps the reverse, I can't quite remember, but one per floor, gender swapping.
And the irony now is that the men have to go to the third floor to go to the bathroom during the renovation.
So what's she going to be remembered most for? What do you think stands out in her legacy?
First of all, that she was working at a time where a lot of women were not professional women, and plus she was in an engineering school which was mostly male dominated. Mm-hmm. And she also did that while being married and having a child. One newspaper article, when she got Woman Educator of the Year Award, she highlighted her schedule, and she says she got up at 6:30, made breakfast for her child, took the child to school, she came to work, left work at 8, gave her child dinner, made sure the child did her homework. And then she worked until midnight. And I'm thinking, if she had a laptop, what else would she have been able to do? The technology just didn't allow her to do as much as she wanted to. But she got a lot accomplished in one day. And also, she was very active socially. For example, Margaret Mitchell, who was the author of Gone with the Wind, was injured and taken to Grady Hospital. She was hit by a driver. And Dorothy was instrumental in raising funds for Grady Hospital's emergency area after Margaret Mitchell died. And she had things like a quiz show, ask these people of the city, important people of the city, questions and things like that. She was also active in the profession. She was president of several library organizations also.
I have a quote here from the dedication to the graduate edition, which would eventually be the Crosland Tower. I just want to read one sentence from it. This is a memorial to Dorothy M. Crosland, Director of Libraries. Through her industry, her persistence and perseverance, her foresightedness, both structures have been conceived and brought to completion. I just like that about her.
I like the word foresightedness, too.
Nice.
We have been speaking with Isabel Altamirano, the engineering and chemistry librarian here at Georgia Tech, about her research into the life and work and legacy of Dorothy Crosland, the amazing director of the Georgia Tech Library. She was the dean from 1953 to 1971, and before that she was titled director of the library. Isabel, thank you so much for being on the show.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
File this set under identifier MS001.
That was Windy by the Association from 1967. And before that, Dominique by Fred.
Jeanine, I think you pronounce it.
Deckers?
Jeanine, is that right? Deckers.
Yes. There's an easier way to say her name. She's the singing nun.
The singing nun from 1963. And we started off with Poor Little Fool by Ricky Nelson from 1958. Songs about unique individuals. And they also happen to be the first three USA number one songs on the Billboard charts written by women with no male co-writer.
Our show today is called Ask Me Who I Was, all about the great Dorothy Crossland.
And women could not attend Georgia Tech when she was the head librarian at first. But thanks to the work of activists like Dorothy and others, female enrollment has grown steadily, if slowly, since 1952.
In 2017, 43% of all new enrollees were female. Woo woo! That's a record number, but here's hoping it goes higher. There are still challenges for women who want to study in technical fields. Fortunately, there are support systems in place for those students.
For example, the Georgia Tech Women's Resource Center, the Georgia Tech Women in Engineering Program, and the Center for the Study of Women, Science, and Technology.
And that's our show for today. We're going to roll the credits. Maybe something about progress, like from the new wave or something. Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Charlie Bennett, that's me, Wendy Hagenmeyer, Fred Rasko, and Emmy Decker.
Time for the big reveal. Charlie was our engineer today.
Hello.
And the show was sponsored in part by The Collective, a library conference designed to create collaborations between next-generation academic librarians, archivists, and library staff.
Find out more at thelibrarycollective.org, where you can see the schedule and register for this year's conference.
Legal counsel and a jolly assortment of Litmus Carols were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Isabel for being on the show. Thanks also to Betty and Leisha for their contribution on the Dorothy Crossland Research Project. Thanks to Lizzie Rolando for the Dorothy Crossland impersonation, which
the
is
original.
Perfect. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and probably other places we don't even know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we find out what's cooking with the Kitchen Sisters.
Ooh, time for our last song today, and it's an anthem that would have suited our Dorothy quite well. When she was told that she didn't have anything to contribute to the Georgia Institute of Technology, applying as a student, I mean here, when she was told to keep quiet and not make a fuss, whenever she encountered those kind of challenges, she did not give up. She marched down halls. She spoke her mind. She changed the campus for the better. And white flag, the surrender flag, was not in her vocabulary. So this is White Flag by Joseph right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Lost in the Stacks from WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Find us online at wrek.org/lostinthestacks to see playlists for old shows, connect with our social media, or get in touch with us.